I'm Tim Yancey, inviting you to explore the fascinating realm of the paranormal, ghosts and hauntings, Bigfoot, UFOs, and alien abductions. Join me live every Sunday evening at 9 p.m. with the foremost authorities and experts in the world regarding the mysterious realm of the unexplained. The Encounters Paranormal Radio Series, as heard on WBZT 1230 AM. EncountersBroadcasting.com.
Are you seeking the darker side of paranormal talk radio? Look no further. Look at Laughter65.com and search for Paranormal Radio Show. Hosted by Tommy Golden. Sponsored by Middle Tennessee Ghost Chasers. And search for Paranormal Radio Show talks about all things on the dark side of paranormal. So tune in live on Thursdays and Fridays from 8 p.m. until 10 p.m. Central Time Zone.
Yeah. What are we made of? Why do I get sick? How can I live a more balanced and whole life? These are just a few of the questions explored each week by naturopath, medical intuitive, and clairvoyant, Dr. Rita Louise on Just Energy Radio. Explore your possibilities every Friday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. Central Standard Time. Join us at JustEnergyRadio.com.
You are listening to Ghostly Time with your hosts Doug and Scott L.
I don't know why I'm reading a bio on this gentleman, but
I know, it's kind of pointless.
Part of the protocol, I guess.
If you don't know, go listen to his previous interview. You should know.
Yes, Lloyd Auerbach is the director of the Office of Paranormal Investigations and author of a paranormal casebook, Ghost Hunting in the New Millennium, which hits the bookshelves. Well, it hit the bookshelves October 1st, 2005, from Atriad Press. His 2004 releases were Ghost Hunting, How to Investigate the Paranormal and Haunting and Poltergeists, A Ghost Hunter's Guide, Ronin Publishing. His first book, ESP, Hauntings and Poltergeists, which was 1986 through Warner Books, was named The Sacred Text on Ghosts by Newsweek. The list goes on here. That's all I can say about this gentleman we have on the phone right now. We could go forever on the stuff that that Lloyd's done, but I think I would just like to get right into it with Lloyd. Lloyd, are you there?
I sure am.
I'm sorry. It goes without saying, why should we have to go through all this stuff when everybody knows who you are? We know who you are. Welcome to the show, Lloyd.
Thank you.
The first thing we want to talk about is we're actually going to get, hopefully, I hope you don't run kicking and screaming after this interview, but we're going to be meeting you at UNIFCON, am I correct?
That's right. My understanding. I'll be there, so you'll have to find me.
Yeah, we'll have to.
Oh, we'll be noticeable.
Yeah,
you'll probably stay away from all the mayhem that we tend to cause. But I did want to say your website is, I think it's
www.mindreader.com.
Yes, mindreader.com. Exactly.
So you read the bio, you always include that, Doug. I always forget to do that when I do the bio thing.
Right. I always want to throw out websites. Lloyd, we had talked before.
A few years ago.
Such a busy person. You come up over and over and over again. Everybody seems to always know what you're into and everything like that, what you've been doing, and I want you to characterize what are you up to lately?
What am I up to lately?
I think that's the rest of the hour.
I'm prepping for, well, a couple things. First of all, I've been teaching parapsychological studies program, basic parapsychological studies program at a place called HCH Institute outside of San Francisco. And for the last year, I've been offering it for distance learning, and we're kind of trying to promote that out, get that out there. It's a little different. It's not just your basic online course. It's actually 60 hours of audio plus a few hours of video plus literally time on the phone with me as part of the distance learning class.
Mm-hmm.
So we're really trying to make this more of an experience for people who can't actually come to the classes locally, than just simply putting a lot of text up on the internet and having people read stuff. That's a big thing of what I've been doing. I've also been working with a few other folks to try and get some more education out there into the field, and working with groups like the Forever Family Foundation. They've got a big conference coming up here in the San Francisco Bay Area in January with a lot of top parapsychologists talking about life after death. And then I'm also in the process of writing a book on chocolate, which is completely different. So,
I think with this crew right here, we'd still be very, very interested.
Oh, definitely.
Well, yeah, you can go to my website, hauntedbychocolate.com, for that part.
I'm going there right now.
Wow. And I really like this learning stuff that you're teaching, because you obviously, you've been around, you've seen this stuff for years and years, and out of a lot of people, I would say learning from you has got to be the intense, it's just got to be the one of the most amazing things ever, because you have all this experience
well,
to
share. it's not just my experience to share. I think what I do share and what my students seem to like is that I'm presenting the viewpoints of a variety of people in the field so that I'm not just giving my perspective. There are some of us that don't agree on certain things. There are some controversies from a philosophical standpoint, for example, about life after death and the evidence. So it's really about what the questions are within the field of parapsychology and where we've been in the field, where we are now. What I think, I do certainly present my own particular perspective, but I like to present other people's as well, whether it agrees with mine or not. So it's really a good overview of the field, and that, I think, distinguishes itself from a lot of other courses that are out there. And it's kind of based on the graduate parapsychology program that I went through when I was a grad student years ago.
That's fantastic. I like the balanced approach as well, because, you know, being a radio talk show host, I've heard a lot, right? I've heard a lot of different things, and a lot of people have some of the theories can intermesh and help shore up other theories, but sometimes they're just completely opposite, and it's going to be one or the other or something in between that nobody's actually mentioned. So I'm glad that you're presenting, you know, the different major theories out there. 60 hours.
I was going to say, 60 hours. I mean, we have basic models of how things work
right.
and what things are, but the reality is we don't know 100% for sure, because at the center of all of this ghostly stuff is a central question that science, for the most part, ignores and actually has assumed, actually has taken on faith certain aspects of this, and that is, what is consciousness? Whether it's living or dead, we're still talking about the mind, and, you know, you can have a mechanistic viewpoint, which is very, very, I guess you could say, faith-based in some respects in science, because there's no evidence, there's no real support for it when it comes down to looking at what's there. It's not falsifiable, it doesn't fit the normal scientific method, the way many materialistic scientists look at this stuff. And then there's the other side, which says that we are, you know, separately brain and mind, and we have evidence for that, but again, it's very difficult to prove one way or the other.
Do you think after, what is the role of our bodies while we're here?
Well, one of the models that is presented, Gary Schwartz, who is kind of a leading researcher these days in mediumship, looking at spirit mediumship, he's got the research project, the Veritas Project at the University of Arizona, presented kind of a metaphor for consciousness, that perhaps the body and brain are kind of like a TV set. We are the kind of receiver, transmitter of consciousness, but consciousness may have started outside of us, our own individual consciousness, and may continue on outside of us. But while we're here, it's kind of filtered through the brain, and it takes on information, and at the same time presents information. And the reason he put it like a TV set is that, you know, when you have cable or just simply an antenna coming into your TV set, if your TV set screws up, if you have some damage to it, and all of a sudden the horizontal hold goes off or the volume cuts out, it doesn't affect the signal at all. The signal's still there. The signal's still good. It's just that the person interfacing with the signal, the person watching the TV, says that there's a problem there. And he likens that to brain damage, that when the brain is damaged, consciousness can't come through the body properly, but the signal still may be perfectly fine.
So, like, for example, Stephen Hawking, brilliant,
absolutely,
brilliant man.
Yeah.
His physical body is just, you know, shot.
Right.
It's, you know, its horizontal hold is off. But what's going on in, you know, behind the scenes is obviously just, you know, crystal clear and sharp.
And he's found a way to communicate still that people can get some of that genius, but probably not the full amount of what's going on there.
Mm-hmm. Right. Like, I wonder what we would get from him if he were, you know, sitting down just having this unassisted communication, just, you know,
it
would be incredible. The what would happen if his I think I'm conscious or conscious, right? I think I'm conscious, and and if
we, most of us think we are, yeah.
I do. and I'm sort of stuck right now with this body that looks like me, and you know I'm
right.
you know I've woken up in it every single day for 40 years. Well, what if it got switched, like a Freaky Friday kind of thing? Would different hardware or wetware, you know, because you know we're mostly water, but would different wetware, you know, a different brain, whatever, would it take my consciousness, my soul, if you will, its thinking, its processes, its whatever. And would it modify it in any way? Would I still be the same person if I switched?
That's a really good question, because who we are, as our identity, is also partly memory, which is a piece that science really doesn't understand yet, how memory actually works. And that's who we are now. And so it's likely that who you are at the heart of things, you know, who any of us are at the heart of things, is, I guess, a little bit different than who we are when we come through the body, the brain. So probably, yes, you probably would be slightly different in terms of the interface, but it's likely, you know, it's very possible, like with some reincarnation experience, that you might actually have the memories as well. The question is how much memory is actually in the body and how much memory is outside the body, and we're learning as we're, you know, these are all questions that are real major questions. We don't really know the answer to them yet.
Wow.
Yeah.
They need to develop another course so that I can take it and learn all this stuff.
Hey, these are part of the things that, some of the things that we talk about. And, you know, one of the questions that comes up, for example, with ghosts, we have instances of apparitions that stick around and people get to communicate with them, whether they're psychics or just average people who have witnessed these things. And it seems that the ghosts have memory of their lives because they're able to present information that's verifiable. And it seems like they're able to communicate things like, we have one case, the Moss Beach Distillery, which is a well-known haunted place the ghosts call the Blue Lady. And we've asked her questions like, you know, what's it like being dead? Do you know the passage of time? Do you know how many years have passed since your death? And the answer to that is she doesn't really keep track of that, because the body is the time clock. Our bodies are our clocks. And if you think about it, when people go into altered states of consciousness, whether it's through drugs, through meditation, through any number of means, one of the signs of being in an altered state is a change in the perception of time. It either stretches or goes faster. So you're in an totally altered state of consciousness because you don't have a body anymore. That's totally different. So her reactions, what is said to us through the witnesses, through the psychics, from her perspective, makes perfect sense if we make those assumptions.
Well, the body, and that does make perfect sense once you break free of the mortal coil, that
right.
The body is it is more or less the limiter. This is just a limited amount of time you have in this body. You know, and we hear people say it over and over again, you know, your soul, the real guts
it's
of you.
It's timeless.
It's timeless.
Yeah. If you have, is it then a dimensional shift, or is it a realm shift or whatever? Because, like, I can understand time because, I've experienced the slow passage of time, like when you're waiting in a... for an appointment.
Social Security office.
I've experienced the quick passage of time, the last half hour with Howard.
Yeah.
Just went like that.
How about this half hour? Jeez.
In this half hour, yeah. It's just like, you know, so I guess doing a radio show is akin to having an altered state of consciousness, because I'm telling you, these half hours just go like that. But
mm-hmm.
I have an instinct as to what, you know, how time passes, but I have the physical part right now, you know.
Right.
If I were a ghost instead of a living being at the moment,
mm-hmm.
Or when I am a ghost again, that kind of thing, I don't have the equipment or whatever I don't have the wetware, the brain, the physicality.
We don't have the body, we don't have the body clock, we don't have, and also probably you don't perceive, you know, clocks the same way. You know, men don't even perceive light and dark, the sun rising the same way. It's about perception. But, you know, the question is, we live in a four-dimensional world. That's our perception. And it may be, according to physicists, we're actually in a multidimensional world. You know, there are mathematically described dimensions that don't necessarily translate to parallel worlds, as so many people have tried to connect. But we live in this other, you know, this world that has many more dimensions, and it may be that when you lose the limiting factors of the perceptions, the senses and such of the body, that you may be perceiving other ways as well. So there may be some different perceptions.
Mm. Well, I'm having a hard time getting my arms around this whole thing.
Why when we come back? Do you believe in reincarnation, or have you...
Well, there's great evidence in some instances, especially what the University of Virginia has been capturing for the last 50-plus years.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't look like everybody gets reincarnated. It doesn't look like everybody becomes a ghost. It doesn't look like there's an everybody does everything situation out there. And we're not quite sure why.
Well, I was just going to ask you, why is that?
Evidently, we're not sure.
Here's the biggest problem. I tell you, the biggest problem with teaching a lot of this, and it's actually the biggest problem I see in the amateur groups out there, is that people want definitive answers. And I can give you a definitive answer to what I believe, but that's not necessarily factual. And the reality is we just don't have the science or the worldview. We don't have the basis, the conceptual basis, to probably describe some of these things in ways that we can then prove, come up with real proof of these sorts of things. And, of course, then the why becomes, you know, why are any of us here? I mean, why did the universe have a Big Bang? That's another why question there. Why is there a multiverse, as some people believe? The why is something that I don't know that we'll ever wrap around ourselves around from a scientific standpoint, but we certainly can from a philosophical or religious standpoint.
People have probably nailed it from that from a philosophical standpoint, I think. Obviously, from a scientific standpoint, we'll never find that out. I don't think
we ever will.
It'll be...
So, I mean, I think, here's what I think. For why some people are ghosts and others are not is because, to me, there seems to be a couple common factors. One, most of these people who stick around as ghosts tend to have a real desire, need, a fear of what's next. There's an emotional piece that they really are so focused on staying here, really sticking around with people, sticking around with places.
Mm-hmm.
And then along with that, there's likely to be an environmental complex of situations or just conditions that allow people to take that strong feeling and then make use of the environment to actually stick around.
It seems, you know, we've been talking about that a lot here, on and off the air, and people, you know, we meet so many people, I'm sure you do too, Lloyd, and they're like, well, why are there ghosts? Why do they happen? And, I mean, it seems like the more we get into this, the more we've been exploring this idea of there has to be a certain, I mean, like, everything has to be in line, it seems like. It has to be this,
right.
Possibly this perfect set of circumstances that make it possible for this particular, you know, for hauntings or these occurrences to happen, it seems like. And obviously, I think the problem is now is trying to find out what those are, which is,
exactly.
We both know it's ridiculous.
Yeah, otherwise we'd end up with a lot more ghosts than we actually have.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
I don't think most people really want to, you know, most people are afraid of what's next, so they're not going to go on to something else if they're not, they don't know what it is.
No, and that's what we've been talking, Doug and I have talked about that, it has to be, maybe that is the answer, possibly that is the answer. It's this special set of occurrences that comes along, very rare, you know,
right.
Maybe not as rare as we think. I mean, look how many books there are on the subject. Look how many people have personal occurrences.
That's actually
But there are two stages here. There's the ghosts that are around when people, like within a week of after they die, just to say goodbye. And there are thousands and thousands and thousands of those kinds of cases every year.
Mm-hmm.
Then they move. They go on. They never come back. Then there are the ones who stick around for much, much longer, and those are the rare ones.
Yeah, those are the ones. I mean, well, there's legends. We hear about legends all the time. There seems to be lots of stories of, you know, like our favorite one. Of course, now I'm going to... Eunice White.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's...
Eunice White, and Jacob Crouch.
Every year, Jake's in Michigan. She walks... I mean, that's a legend. That's been going on for how many years now? I mean, that's taken... I mean...
Late 1800s.
Yeah, it's been going on for over a century now. It seems like... I mean... What you're saying is the rare part is these ones that happen over and over again. Am I right by saying these are the residual type of hauntings?
Well, no, these are actually not. We're talking about conscious apparitions here.
Oh, okay.
Haunting. The residual hauntings, I mean, it seems to be environmental completely, you know, a real complex of environmental conditions. And an event that happens, a physical event that happens that leaves an imprint. And from that perspective, you don't even need death at that point. We have plenty of residual hauntings where the event that's being seen is of people who are still alive. So those circumstances, they're not connected whatsoever to the death of the individual. You can have a videotape of somebody. That person can die, and you can still look at the videotape. I watch old movies of people who are dead, who have been dead for a very long time. I don't think that they're hauntings.
Yeah,
That's
a great way to look at it.
It's a recording. So if it's an environmental recording versus something on magnetic tape, doesn't really matter.
Versus somebody who's conscious, who's like a live stage play.
Mm. Exactly. I tell you what, we need to take a break for a couple of minutes here. But before we go to break, Lloyd, just hang tight. And you need to make me a promise, Lloyd. You can't answer this question either.
Yeah, don't answer.
I told you about this trivia question on the break. You can't answer the question, all right?
All right.
We're going to ask this question again. I think some people from the late crowd are coming in now, and we want to give these tickets away really, really bad, all right?
These are tickets to the Mid-South Paranormal Convention coming up in Louisville, Kentucky.
Mm-hmm. And that's going to be on
September 21st through the 23rd.
Thank you, Bonnie, for being on top of the ball there. because I was going to have to click buttons for a half an
hour.
No problem. I'll read this time if you'd like. Here's the question, guys, and what we're going to do is take calls through the break this time, all right? So call whenever you want, but we're going to be going to break here in a second. The question is, though, which of the following locations was once declared, and I say this in quotes, the most haunted house in England? You're going to have four choices on this, all right? It's either the Borley Rectory, 10 Downing Street, Buckingham Palace, or the Tower of London. I'll ask it one more time for you guys. Which of the following locations was once declared the most haunted house in England? Again, the first one of these answers, one of them is going to be, it's either the Borley Rectory, 10 Downing Street, Buckingham Palace, or the Tower of London. Which one is it? That's what we want to know, okay? You got something to say to it?
Call in.
You need to call into our line at 605-475-8590. When asked for the conference code, press in 555-1081, followed by the pound sign, and then press 1-1 to raise your hand and answer the question.
You sound like a recording.
That was awesome. I swear to God. I saw your lips moving. So
it was really me. I did it.
It was really you, yes.
All right, one more time. Well, no, let's go to break.
Let's go to break.
I think we've asked it enough times. Let's just do that.
Maybe we've stumped everybody. I see people on the line, and they're just not raising their hands.
They're scared. Yeah. They're scared to answer the question. It's not that hard, man. Just go ahead and do that. We're going to leave the phone lines open during break, though, so if you want to call in with that, we will be on the line during break.
Yeah.
So hang tight. We do have Lloyd Auerbach here. Lloyd, thanks for putting up with us.
Sure.
We'll be right back after this.
For more information, visit ghostlytalk.com.
Wow, I keep shaking this ball, and all I get is the number 8. Where's the snow? I told my psychic I wanted to know if I was going to win the lottery, and she asked me for the numbers. The death card keeps showing up in this deck. Maybe I should get a reflector on my scooter. I keep dreaming about frogs leaping into my bed. This book says I'm just horny. Having a bad day at the Wheel of Fortune? Karma Cast has answers. Check out karmakast.com for show listings and times. KarmaCast.com is a division of Mayhem Media.
Buddha, Vishnu, the Dalai Lama, Isis, Baal. What do all of these ancient gods have in common with each other? They're all going down. World of the Unexplained. Conservative paranormal talk. Big on God. Big on guns. Our God can beat up your God.
Shadow Government. Strange Rituals. New World
Shadow
Order.
Governments. Strange
buried
rituals.
Treasures.
New
planetary
world
mind
order.
Control.
Strange
rituals. Military cover-up.
Corporate shadow governments. Strange rituals. New world order. Buried treasures. Planetary mind control. Corporate interests.
Presidential
assassination. Unidentified flying objects. Presidential assassination.
Pyramids.
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 Fascists.
Illuminati.
Fascists.
Apocalypse.
Out there. It's a strange world.
Visit OutThereRadio.net for more information.
Listening to Ghostly Talk with your hosts Doug and Scott L.
Brother, my God, what a break!
What a
that was
break.
The biggest break ever. And
boy, we gotta thank Lloyd for being so patient for us.
Yes, I had a fantastic time during that break. I wanted to make the announcement that the question has been asked and answered several times. So what we're going to do is we're going to split up the tickets and we're going to Mike. Called in, and he attempted the question. We ended up giving him two tickets, and then Shelley called in, and she wanted a ticket. She answered it perfectly. So so Mike and Shelley, we will see you both, and Mike, your guest as well, at the Mid-South Paranormal Conference, and you'll be on the guest list along with us. We are talking with, of course, the legendary... I think you're legendary by now, Lloyd.
I think so.
I'm a legend in my own mind.
Exactly.
He's legendary with us.
That's definitely true. Lloyd Auerbach of www.mindreader.com. And we got really deep there that last half hour, didn't we?
Yeah.
I want to know why, you know, why ghosts are happening, why weird photographs. There's a question. We're out there. We ghost hunted last night. We went to a haunted resale shop, and we know the backstory. It's got a history. It's got reports. It's got everything. It's pretty creepy. I mean, it's got everything going for it, right? What if we do get a photo of an apparition or an EVP, or we notice a temperature drop in a localized area that comes and
right.
goes, or This is all, we call it evidence of a haunting. Is that really what it is?
Well, it's evidence, and then what you need to do with evidence, any kind of evidence, including people's experiences, is you need to go back and see what else could account for them other than just a purely haunting or paranormal explanation. So you need to actually kind of separate out each bit of evidence, each story, each event that's talked about, and see, you may overall have a haunting there, but it may be some of the stuff that you gather is not related. It's not, it's got its own explanation. So it's really important to kind of go through each step. And that's kind of the way science works, is you really have to kind of falsify or try to delete certain things. And if you can't, then it falls back into the category of, well, hey, this makes the most sense as the explanation. And it's paranormal.
Yes, I don't know if this particular resale shop is as haunted as, let's say, the Borley Rectory. You see, I had to say that, Lloyd, because I forgot to tell folks.
Get the answer? Actually, either a search for the most haunted house in England or the most haunted house, that phrase on Google would have given them the answer right off the bat.
Yeah, I believe that.
Doug had too many moon pies over the weekend. He can't.
I know. I'm moon pied out. So no. What happens is most haunted house in England is the Borley Rectory. The most haunted house in Grand Haven may or may not be the haunted resale shop that we went to. But I look forward to any and all EVP that I get. Why does EVP right now, Lloyd, because you've been doing this for years, right?
Mm-hmm.
EVP is the current craze. At least it is with me and
well,
many
yeah.
people that I talk to. Why is EVP taken up again, and why is it like such a craze?
Well, I think it's a craze because so many of the photos were debunked so easily. I mean, there's the orb pictures, which were the craze for a number of years, were very clearly really put out of the way. There are some interesting pictures we get sometimes, but in general, because of so many photographic issues, they're kind of put out of the way. I think EDC is more interesting today because until fairly recently, you didn't have decent digital recorders, and it was pretty easy for analog recorders to occasionally pick up stray radio signals and such. So things are much better shielded. Mm-hmm. As opposed to cameras, which are picking up more and more orbs and things like that because of a better flash and more reflections. Mm-hmm. So it's actually gone the exact opposite. However, what's important to know with EVP is what's going on, and what's going on from the field, and actually from some of the experts on EVP, is that if it's a ghost that's causing this, it's not an audio signal. It's not a sound that's happening. It is an effect directly on the device itself. And that can also happen because you're in a haunted place and you, as the person investigating, pick up some of the residual haunting, and your unconscious may actually also affect the recorder as well. So it's called psychokinesis. It's mind over matter, whether a living person does it or a dead guy does it.
It's very what is it?
Psychokinesis.
No. Yeah, but that's what the parapsychologists say.
Right.
Everything is you. And I was
Actually, that's not true. No, that's what some parapsychologists. I'm a parapsychologist. It is possible that it could be you. It is possible that it could be an external entity. But if you only get an EVP, if you get nothing else in a place, no other evidence whatsoever, you can't jump to the conclusion that it's an outside voice.
No, you can't.
You have to actually say, well, you know, maybe this is me. Now, here's the other thing. Let's throw something else into the mix, and that is coming from some of the folks who've been doing EVP for a long time, is that it may require you and the ghost to create the voice. In other words, you may need to be part of the equation as well.
Well, that's common.
Be able to do it for themselves.
That's common with obviously poltergeist phenomena. That's what a parapsychologist and all types of people say that's what a poltergeist.
It requires an angel.
It requires.
Well, the same thing. And you know, Lloyd, I think that there. I know that there are obviously groups that are better at capturing EVP than others. For example, for us, it's like pulling teeth, right?
It is. We spent 3 hours last night, and I have not heard anything yet.
It's like us pulling. For us, it's like pulling teeth. When we get some, they're spectacular.
Yeah, it's about 3 years since we.
But we go for decades, you know, it seems, or years without any. For other groups, they can go into a location, sit down, turn a recorder on. Hey, what's going on? And boom, you know, the little boy that's haunting the place is just like all over that recorder, you know. It's so maybe it is an agent kind of relationship.
Maybe it's the right mix of people too.
Right. Like that's what we're saying is that you really, it's almost as if the investigators become sort of mediums for the entities to kind of work through.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, otherwise you could just set the recorder up and leave the place and see if the entity wants to communicate. That usually doesn't work very well.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and you know what? We've done that a million times, too. Just set the recorder up and to see what happens. Now, I've heard of people getting results on that, though.
On
occasion, we've had people that have sent us pieces of audio. One of my favorites is, if you remember this, Doug.
That was phenomenal.
The one from Prospect Place.
Prospect Place,
you were
in Ohio.
The same thing.
Yeah.
Some crazy sounds came through. The only problem is, obviously, is you have no way to verify that. You have no witnesses or anything like that. It's just something that you were, whatever the device recorded it.
And you actually need a second recorder as a backup. You actually need to have two recorders there, preferably of the same type, sitting next to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Because if one gets it and the other one doesn't, you pretty clearly have something that is either a malfunction of the device or is something that is placed on the device, whereas if both get it, it's most likely an external sound that is probably has a natural explanation to it.
And a good example of this is my DW90 Olympus digital recorder.
And you guys had two identical recorders yesterday.
Well, night. What I'm saying is my DW90 I had, which is like one of the first digital recorders.
Oh, not the old one.
That recorder... and I think it may be just to this recorder itself. I'd like to get another one just to see what happens. But it has a very noticeable popping that goes on.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, it just makes this phantom pop. that I've recorded. And I mean, I've actually had put research stuff up on the Ghostly Talk website going, you know, at one time when I was a lot less educated about this stuff, where I was like, oh my God, we have phantom pops going on the recorder. What is going on here? Where, you know, and I think it's only that recorder. There may be something wrong with the circuitry or something like that. So I'm willing to put, you know, the bet, that's a good example. If you put up two DW90 Olympus recorders together, mine would make some crazy weird sound that would freak everybody out, and the other one would be perfectly silent if you put it in a silent room. So that does happen, I think.
Yeah.
It seems like it makes more sense to just be there at the location when you're recording, because you could verify that then.
That's right. That's right. It'll help. You know, any additional verification is helpful. You definitely do need, however, really do need people's stories. And I see so many amateur ghost hunters going out and going to places that look spooky or sound or seem like they might be spooky, and they never talk to a human being. They never actually get any story that would indicate that the place is actually haunted.
Well, we talk about that so much.
Well,
now, too.
There is a you've got to see the thrill to that, Lloyd. I mean, I
yeah. Oh yeah, I tell you, from a thrill perspective, I got no problem with it. But to claim that you're doing science and doing actual,
yes,
that's a different story.
It does sort of fall to the wayside, and you know, at that point, you're just out there looking for the fun or the thrill of it. It's
right.
Not real investigation.
Right, and I think that's fine. I don't see any problem with that as long as people are not trespassing.
Right.
But you really, you know, to suddenly say, well, I'm following along the scientific method, I'm doing it, that's not true at all, because you're not following along anything at that point. You're just kind of having fun, which is good. Fun is good.
Yeah, but as far as, like you said, scientific research.
Well, pretty much the only thing that you're doing if you're doing that is you're,
so
I mean, there are benefits. You're becoming more familiar with your equipment, which, believe me, I've had new equipment out in the field and fumbled and thought, you know, I needed to spend time with this.
Right.
You know, I learned the hard way. You know, you got to put me in the dark with a new camera and then have me not take a single photo except for of my foot. You know, I mean, and then I'll be like, okay, I needed to spend more time with this. So you know, you are exercising your skills a little bit, but no, it's not a real investigation if you haven't looked into the history, if you haven't gotten interviews, you know, if you've just read about it on Shadowlands, that's not enough.
Unfortunately.
Right, that's right.
Right.
and it's okay to be an explorer to kind of find those places, but, you know, you really need to separate the idea of an investigation from an exploration.
Right.
Well, I got to jump on the explorer part, though, for a second, because we've been through this years ago where we've seen people that have they basically just drove around finding abandoned houses, going in them, kicking the door down, walking in them, going, and then as soon as the ceiling tile fell out of the ceiling or something like that. It must be a ghost, right?
Right.
So now they're saying, oh my God, this place is so haunted, we have to go back there. I'm like, wait, you broke the door down, walked in there, stomped around a house that hasn't been occupied in 50 years, and you wonder why something fell out of the ceiling.
Right. Exactly. No, I understand. I actually know of groups that are scouting, looking for locations, and they'll find a spooky place that feels weird or looks weird, and they'll start talking to the neighbors and start talking as if they're trying to create a ghost story around the place.
Well, I mean, if they're getting information, I mean, if they go to somebody and go, hey, that house over there, it's abandoned for some reason. You guys
know
why?
No, we're not talking about abandoned houses. We're talking about houses where people live.
Oh, well, that's not cool.
That's just uncool. Well, and not only that, do you know, Lloyd, you have probably been in situations where you've asked a question of a witness or of somebody you're interviewing and then thought, I just totally asked a leading question.
Right.
They could jump all over that and invent something because I've basically planted an idea. And I do that here during the show. You know, sometimes I ask leading questions, but see, we're supposed to because we're supposed to be having
radio.
A dialogue, right?
Yeah.
I'm not interviewing you as a witness of any kind. I'm finding out your stories and finding out, you know, what people
what's
should
going
be doing
on,
out
yeah.
there. And if you don't phrase something correctly, a question, somebody could actually, so you're at a neighbor's house, and you're like, you know the creepy Adams family looking place next door? You planted an idea.
You already
in their head.
Planted an idea in there. Yeah.
You know,
right.
I mean,
right.
They could run.
Or
with
actually,
it.
Just knocking on the door, saying, "Hi, I'm with a ghost hunting group.
Yeah.
We want to know if the house next door is haunted." Why? And the people will be reacting like, "Why? What have you heard?"
and then they could actually get caught up in the excitement.
Right.
And really believe that, yes, then it's haunted. If you think it's haunted, it must be haunted. And just run with it. Oh, my gosh, that explains why the dog wouldn't go near there.
That's right. That's
uh-huh.
right.
And boom, you've
got a haunting. Congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations. Yeah, that's pretty scary. I'd like to avoid that kind of practice if possible.
Well, no, the biggest thing, what I find, how do I say this, and I'm trying to be nice.
I understand.
You're talking about leading somebody, you know, and we find this on, Lloyd, I think I always say there's not really any experts in this field at all, but I have to say, you're probably one of the only people that, if I had to put somebody in a category of expert, I would definitely put you there, Lloyd. Now, that being said,
based on experience
Well,
and now there's a couple hundred experts in the world pretty easily who know the literature, who know the history, who know what's going on, and we're experts in people's experiences.
Well, yeah, that's history, isn't it?
Yeah. But you still can't explain it.
It's also understanding people's experiences and how they react to these things and what kinds of stories there are, what kinds of experiences there actually are.
Yeah,
and
okay.
Understanding the background for these.
That's an expert topic. I mean, that's...
And that really you can be. Definitely can be. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm bouncing everything.
Bouncing the monitor everywhere.
I am. I have one of them traveling legs.
But my thing was...
Especially when I get excited about a topic.
And I'm sure you feel the same way or you've been approached the same way. I mean, every single day, I hate to say it, but nowadays sometimes people are like... if you're at a party or you're hanging out somewhere and somebody's like, oh, yeah, hey, meet my buddy Scott. He's a ghost hunter. And then I'm like, oh, great. Because here they come. I love talking to people about the subject, but it seems like sometimes they automatically think that you're an expert on the subject. And I always have to tell people, look, okay, bottom line here is I have no idea what all this stuff is. I've never been dead. I don't know what's going on here. I can only tell you, and this sounds similar, I can only go by the experiences of things that I've been told, I've experienced, stories that I've heard, and things like that. And I think that's a bit when you, going back to what you were saying before, Doug, if you come to someone's house and say, hi, I'm a ghost hunter, well, they're going to think in their mind, well, this person's a ghost hunter. They're wearing their little ghost hunting group t-shirt, and they have their little pen-like cap and their flashlight and their recorders. They must be an expert in this thing. So if they say it's haunted, it has to be haunted. I mean, that's kind of where I've seen things.
Well, or there's the folks who claim that they're certified as ghost hunters. I actually got an email from someone recently who said that they were a certified paranormal psychologist, and I responded by saying, well, first of all, who certifies you as a paranormal psychologist unless you are, if you're a psychologist, that's one thing, but, it's against the law to call yourself a psychologist unless you have the background in psychology. Forget about parapsychology.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know who was certifying this or claimed to be certifying this person, but that you can't certify anybody as a psychologist. It's not, that process doesn't exist.
Well,
we give out certificates. Our certificates for our program don't certify you. There are certificates, like a diploma is a certificate of completion, and that's what ours does.
Yeah, and it says, I have completed this course. It doesn't make me an expert in anything. It doesn't certify me to read people's minds or anything like that. it's saying that I completed this course. There are a lot of courses, it seems like, going on, especially now, that, and they make you certified. I received plenty of emails on that, too, from people saying I'm a certified ghost hunter. And I'm like, well,
sometimes certifiable, but not necessarily certified.
Which is fine. I'm more accepting of someone who's certifiable than someone who says they're a certified ghost hunter, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, and then there are those folks who actually post on their website they have PhDs in parapsychology when such things don't exist. They just bought one at a diploma mill.
Well, why do you, and I think I already know the answer to this, Lloyd, but I want to ask you, why do people do this? Because we've discussed this a few times on the show. We've alluded to what our conclusions are on this, but I'd like to know what you think about that. Why do people have to certify themselves so much?
I think it's an ego thing, and I think it's also to, they're trying to gain fame in any way they can. They've seen a couple of plumbers get a TV show on Sci-Fi, so a lot of people are making pilots. I get contacted by people constantly who say they're making a TV show or a pilot or this, and they're not even producers. It's a lot easier today to do that.
I can't tell you how much we can identify with that.
I mean, not knocking anybody at all, but yeah, it seems like that's... and John Zaffis was on the show not too long ago.
Oh, he was hilarious.
I think he really hit the nail on the head, Lloyd, by saying, you want to get into the paranormal. It's a great thing. I support anybody who wants to learn in this field. But please get into it for the right reasons. Don't get into it because you're going to have a podcast or a radio show or a possible pilot. Get into this because you want to learn about otherworldly things and about this field, not because it's a chance for you to get yourself on a TV show.
Honestly, say this is not a money-making field.
You don't say, Lloyd.
Gee.
Yeah, it's not. I can tell you from a lot of personal experience, it's really not. And so that's the wrong reason to try to get into this field.
Yeah, this is our sixth year of broadcasting. And
we have lost, we lost our butts four years ago. So
we're basically in the poorhouse. So it does not make any money. This is our, I classify this as my hobby, even though it's my devout hobby. I am totally attached to both broadcasting and ghost hunting. But
well, the thing is, though, with not a money making venture. If I was going to take a course.
Well, that's
I was in college. You were in college, Doug. What I mean, we went into college and taking courses in whatever our interest was or what we needed to take and stuff like that. And we had the expectation, along with the knowledge, of the person standing in front of us who was teaching us all this stuff was a certified. Well, they were certified for real. They had either a degree, whatever, behind them that gave them an expertise in whatever field, like mathematics or whatever it may be. These people were the best of the best. These people were through years of training to do this thing, right? I didn't go into college like with a guy, you know. So yeah, this guy Bob's going to teach us. He works down at the local Office Max or whatever, and
right.
You know, he's going to teach us math. He has nothing to back him up. He has no accreditations. He has no experience whatsoever. But he's going to teach me mathematics, right? It's the same situation. It seems like I'd rather take a class. I mean, hey, I'm going to pimp Lloyd. Fine, I'll do it because I mean, I'm confident, Lloyd, that you have some experience in this field. Okay,
yeah.
You see what I'm saying? I mean, so I would take a class with Lloyd. I would take a class with Lloyd because I'm going to learn something. I'm going to learn something from years of experience, and you know, countless people you've talked to, Lloyd. I think that gives you some it backs you up a little bit as far as the classes are concerned.
Yeah, and also recommendations from people who are in the field. I mean, from the appropriate reputable organizations makes a big difference too.
This is just something I want people to know about.
Yeah,
you know,
I wonder,
important.
And that's an interesting thing, Lloyd. If somebody is searching to learn more. Okay. Obviously, you can go to the library and you can dust off every single book and you can start from scratch, right?
Right.
You can search the internet, make charts, lists, graphs, things like that, then go out and get the appropriate books and then go talk to, you know, email the appropriate experts and develop it from, again, from scratch, but from a different starting gate.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can search for a class. Right?
Yes. Yes, you can.
And there's lots. And
I would suggest people do is first, if they're looking for reading, to take a look at the websites of the Parapsychological Association and the Parapsychology Foundation. The Parapsychology Foundation is easy to start with because it's parapsychology.org. And that will give you access to a lot of information. That organization, the Parapsychological Association, the Rhine Research Center, for example, which is they will recommend certain people, and they have their own courses. They actually have a summer study program that they offer every year. The Institute of Noetic Sciences offers courses from time to time, but the question is, you know, who is the person actually offering the class, and what's their pedigree, you might say. One of my former JFK students, a graduate of the parapsychology program when I was actually teaching, Bill Everest, teaches at Pima College in Tucson, Arizona. His course is, you know, is based on what he learned and based on keeping up with the field because he stays up on the field of parapsychology. So it's important to find out, you know, who that person is who's teaching or where they got their background in the field as well.
So if you can identify with the person or if you can identify them and say, you know, this person's done this, done that, the other thing, they developed this course.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be right now the most fantastic recommendation for that course, right?
Well, I think that and finding out that they're not thought of as a pariah by other folks.
Well, that's true. Well, of course, you are definitely thought of. I would put you in the expert category,
and we're very, very hardcore about that here.
Very difficult because you've studied all this stuff, and I have to say, if I wanted to get an overview of the entire field of the different theories, how it all intermixes, how the theories are similar and how they're different, that kind of thing. I really think that your course probably would have would give me that.
Well, that would
pretty much right away,
and
I would like that. Of course, the Rhine Institute. Oh,
Doug's going back to college, it
looks like. I might be going back to college.
Lloyd, unfortunately, we are at the top of 9 o'clock here, and they're going to boot us off and set fire to the studio if we don't leave.
They do.
Well, we want to thank you so much, Lloyd. It's always an honor to talk to you.
Thank you. Thank you. And I look forward to meeting you guys at UNIFCON in October.
Oh, man, that's going to be...
You might change your opinion about that after you hang out with us.
Lloyd, hang on the line for 1 second. We're just going to close the show off.
Your website, of course, Lloyd, is www.mindreader.com.
Wow.
I have to thank Lloyd.
This was just a crazy show today. I got a headache. How about you?
I had to take ibuprofen on break. Yeah.
This is one of those shows where it was like, all the way through. But we got through it. We did it.
And I have to thank Howard Real of EnochCoincidence.com and Enoch.real.net or org. I don't remember. But
Enoch.real.net.
.net. R-I-E-L-L is how you spell that. I'd like to thank Sergi, but he didn't actually show up, but that's
okay. He called. We're going to work it out.
We
cool.
still talked about...
Jeff Wamsley. Got to thank Jeff Wamsley, too.
Yeah, thank you to Jeff. And, of course, Mike and Shelley. Congratulations.
We'll be calling you in a couple of minutes.
And we'll be seeing you at Mid-South, so I can't wait.
Okay, are we done?
Yeah, we're done.
I want to thank every listener as well.
We're all pretty fried. Guys, have a great week. This has been Ghostly Talk. I have been Scott L.
And I have been Doug.
I'm still Bonnie.
I need to go someplace where a man can think.
To listen to now.
Balanced news coverage. Real people with real lives in your dramas and on your talk shows. And if we don't get it, we'll make it ourselves. Don't hate the media, become the media.
I need to go someplace where a man can think.
Don't hate the media, become the media.